welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDETM. Stephen Henderson, your host, and as always, I'm really glad you've decided to join us. So in just a few weeks, my oldest child will start as a college freshman. This is a day that we've been preparing for since he was born, thinking about how to pay for it, thinking about how to get him the best educational opportunities so that he'd have the right choices when he was going to college. And of course, thinking about what his life will be like after college, that a college degree will open many, many doors to him that would otherwise be closed. And of course, the money is one of the biggest concerns. How do you get it together? How do you save enough? How do you make enough to make sure that your kids can go to the college of their choice? But these days, that choice of going to college looks a little different than it did 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. Today, when you get out of college, it doesn't necessarily translate to a stable, well-paying job. And that raises a big question. Is college worth it anymore? And if so, what's the appropriate price tag for it? And how do we calculate that? How do we know what's the right amount of money to save or to pay for college? How do we measure it? How do we measure the value of it, especially in the short term? It's August, which means lots of families are in the same place as mine, thinking about college starting, thinking about how to pay for it. Lots of other families are thinking about college applications, test taking, and prospective students milling around college campuses, thinking about where they might go. But what do we do about all these questions that surround that choice to go to college? Are there other choices like community college or foregoing college altogether to learn coding and get to work? What about things like gap years? There are just so many options competing with the four-year degree right now. Ron Lieber is someone who has been thinking a lot about all of these questions for a little while. He is a New York Times columnist, and he writes the Your Money column. He also recently published a book titled The Price You Pay for College, and he's here to talk to us about all things college and more. Ron, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations on getting one off into the higher education world, whatever it may be costing you.
That's right. I've got one going in a few weeks, and then I have another one who's set to go next year. So that really, as I said, is a focus for our family right now, and it has been for a long time, trying to get ready for this moment. And I don't have to tell you that the expense is the thing that just stands out more than anything else. The money that we have been saving since our kids were born, and of course the money that we're trying to make to augment that savings and be able to pay all the way through. So let's talk about why four-year degrees are so expensive right now. How did we get to this moment when so many people are not only making extraordinary efforts to save and pay for college, but also borrowing extraordinary amounts and saddling themselves sometimes with decades of obligation to do it? How did we get here?
Sure. So let's start with the public institutions. State legislatures do not subsidize them the way that they used to. So we have to start there. Now, it's not entirely the fault of the state legislatures. The fact of the matter is that there are more regulations, federal regulations in particular, that act on these institutions in ways that they did not before. So we may be tempted to complain about that, right? We may or may not like Title IX or other regulations, that create more rights for students who are undergraduates, but also responsibilities for the institutions that then require additional administrators and thus additional costs, right? But, I think we do want our disabled kids to, have better access to school. And I think we do want our female identifying children, to have equal access to the soccer field, right? But then when you ask the institutions about this, they point the finger back at us and they say, you and your kids want to have those kids living for 4 years in the manner to which they have become accustomed. And that means super fast Wi-Fi everywhere and all of the people and expense and hardware required to maintain that network. You want a much better career counseling office, and you deserve it, but we are tripling the size of that operation. 12% of kids are showing up on campus with prescriptions for psych meds, and half of them are going to experience anxiety or depression, and they're better at self-identifying. So you're demanding a counseling center that's 3 times as big? Well, you deserve that, but that costs money. Right. So it's all of these things sort of mixed together. And at the same time, the vast majority of parents, have seen their, incomes flatline, right, unless you're in the top 10 or 15% of household incomes. So what are people going to do? Well, they're either not going to send their kids to college or they're going to borrow, and the kids are going to borrow too. Mm. And that's sort of the short version of how we got here.
Yeah. So I have this conversation with my mother all the time, and she sent me and my sister to college about 30 years ago now, 35 years ago, really. And she says, look, it was hard then to come up with the money for college. And she seems to think that in a proportional sense, that it's all kind of the same. And I keep trying to explain to her that the $10,000 or $15,000 it might have cost per year at a college then is nothing compared to the $50,000 or $70,000 it can cost now. And we go back and forth about this, but I really would love to have you address the idea of whether there is a disproportionate growth in the cost of college over that period of time, or has it always been something that you had to prepare for and make sacrifices to do of the same size that we're doing now?
You're right, and she's wrong. And here's a good way to think about it. 25 or certainly 30 or 35 years ago, you could have put yourself through Ann Arbor, East Lansing, Western, Eastern, maybe not a private college, depending on your financial circumstances and how much aid you got, but you certainly could have put yourself through a state school by working in the summer during high school, putting that money away, working in the summer during college, putting that money away, and working 10, 15, maybe 20 hours a week during the school year, but probably less, and putting that money towards college. This was a thing that you could do. It is not a thing that you can do now.
Sure.
It costs too much, right? And as much as your mother and any mother may be trying to be helpful, right, the problem with that conversation is that as rational as you may be in your understanding of how things have changed, it's pretty hard to come out of that conversation without feeling guilty, right? Your parents did it for you, so you have to do it for your own children. If you don't, you're a failure, right? And then you end up, off on a guilt trip at, 35,000 feet flying, from DTW and looking down and saying, well, I'm just going to have to borrow, right? I'm going to have to borrow to the hilt because my kids should get the same thing that I got. But it's a different world. It's a different generation. And that may necessitate different choices for you and your family.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking with Ron Lieber, who is a columnist for The New York Times. He writes the Your Money column. His most recent book is The Price You Pay for College. And we're talking about the price that all of us, I think, who have children at some point have to confront. How will we pay for college if that's the path that our children choose? How do we save to be able to pay for college? How do we try to earn more to be able to save more to pay for college? And What are we getting when we do that, when we make that choice? That four-year degree, what does that actually buy you? What does it get you in our society? Is it the same as it always has been? Or are there other paths you can choose to get to the same places and not pay those exorbitant tuition rates? As always, we want to hear from you during the conversation as well. Give us a call and let us know where you are in this process. Are you someone who, like me, is a parent about to send a child off to college finally after years and years of saving? Are you someone who has had a hard time coming up with that money to be able to send your kids to college? What kind of choices have you had to make sure that there would be enough at the point that your child needed to go off to school? Also, give us a call if you're somebody who is headed to college pretty soon. Give us a sense of what your motivation is for deciding to go to college, whether it's a four-year college or a two-year college. What is it that you think you're getting at this point by going off to college? And did you consider alternative choices? Did you consider other ways that you could get to the career or the life you wanted? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Before we get to our listeners, Ron, I want to put one of those questions to you. What is the value of a college degree, whether it's a four-year or a two-year? And these questions that are getting raised about that value, people saying, hey, I can get to where I need to go without it. How true is that? And is that damaging, I guess, the value that people, I guess, have always placed on the idea of a four-year degree?
Yeah, so the value question is somewhat cosmic, even though people don't always treat it that way. You know, what we talk about when we talk about value is effectively, you know, what is the definition of success and how much is enough, right? You can apply those two questions to almost any human endeavor that has any kind of meaning. We tend to talk about value in terms of dollars just because that's where the best data is. Mm-hmm. And the best data tells us that if you go to college and finish, which a lot of people don't do, if you go to college and finish, over the course of a lifetime, you'll probably earn, you know, roughly $1 million more than somebody who doesn't go to college. Now, to the extent that that gap persists, it's not necessarily because college graduates keep getting farther ahead. It's, you know, people with high school degrees are falling further and further behind. I don't need to explain that to your audience, you know, who've seen a, you know, generation of relatively well-paying manufacturing jobs, you know, sort of decline in number, right? But there are other ways to think about value. What is the value of the people that I am meeting to me in terms of, you know, lifetime return on friendship? What about the mentors I'm finding in college who can, you know, take my head off of my body and then screw it back on straight again and point me in a direction that I never could have imagined for myself? What about the value of a degree that might be expensive, but might, as you mentioned in the intro, open doors to rooms that I never could have gotten entry into otherwise, right? It's hard to put a quantitative figure on those, but they matter qualitatively.
Yeah. Yeah. And that gap that exists, talk about the lower end of that, the consequence of not being able to or choosing not to go to college. You're saying that that's getting worse, and it's kind of a different equation as well than it was 30 or 40 years ago.
I mean, I think it's harder to achieve a solid and stable middle class life than it used to be if you only have a high school degree. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say it's impossible. That's not to say there aren't exceptions. But I guess the best way to think about, you know, the choice or these two, you know, distinctive situations is to consider the fact that there is actually risk in both of them. right? If you send your kid to a school that costs a lot of money but doesn't actually, graduate, a high number of people who start there, mm-hmm. and if people in your income bracket, and this is data that you can look up, end up with a lot of debt, and then you end up in a situation because you borrowed a lot that, you know, you can't retire when you want to or retire at all. And then your kids are paying, you know, for your nursing home later on, right? That's not a good result. There's risk in going to college, right? There's risk in paying for it in the wrong way. And so we need to talk about it in that way, in the same way that we've sort of gotten used to talking about the risk involved with not pursuing higher education.
Yeah.
Now, the odds are going to be different for, you know, each family and each situation. You know, is there an apprentice program, you know, that leads to a solid middle class salary in your area that your kid is interested in and passionate about? Well, that may be a difference maker for a kid who doesn't want to go to college. And then there's the kid who, you know, has only fallen in love with the private university that's going to require $30,000 in debt for the kid and $100,000 for you, right? I mean, there the choices become a little bit more clear. But every family's different, and you need to ask yourself the hard questions, preferably a year or two or before your kid's ready to make the decision, so you can shop and hunt and look sure. around accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a lot of folks queued up here who want to participate in the conversation. Let's start with Ian in Detroit. Ian, what's on your mind?
Hi there. Hey. I have had a very complicated path through my educational career, and I think a lot of it is surrounded, or like a lot of it's caused by the price. In 2014, I graduated high school. I didn't do great due to some health issues. I had my gallbladder removed and stuff like that. And so I ended up graduating and taking my courses at the community college nearby, Macomb. And I did really well being like on my own and everything. So I was trying to plan what I wanted to do based on like what was the quickest, like the best return for the amount of time that I had to put in. Not necessarily something that I was passionate about or something that I was good at. But like kind of trying to find a compromise between those things. So I ended up choosing the nursing program. I got into the program and I was greatly underprepared for like the emotional toll required to be in that kind of environment. I was in a clinical and there was this patient that ended up passing away after being in a coma for many weeks. And so if I had worked in the ER or like in the hospital setting before that, I would have been better prepared. So I think taking a gap year warrants a conversation. But beyond that, I ended up changing my major and taking out a bunch of loans to go to Wayne State. I was there for one semester. I was really struggling. I was working three jobs. I had just gotten hired at Beaumont, actually. And then, like, the day before I was supposed to start, I was driving home to my parents' house, and I ran out of gas. And there was a semi-truck driver that ended up falling asleep at the wheel and ended up hitting me as a pedestrian.
Oh.
And so I was out of school for 2.5 years because of that. And again, if I was able to afford my tuition, I would have been able to afford my gas,
right.
I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like the challenges are not apparent, and the dangers of trying to take on two. Like, if you're stretching yourself too thin financially, it's going to come back to bite you somewhere else.
Yeah. Ian, I love that you called, and I'm sorry about all of those really harrowing twists and turns in your journey. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Ron Lieber, our guest, respond to Ian's story about trying to get a college degree. We'll also get to more of your calls and comments. Stephen Clarkston, Rebecca in Grosse Pointe Woods, Jeff in Southfield will get to you as well. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us at Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences.
The sound of Detroit.
101.9 WDET is your public radio station.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host. And as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking about the cost and the value of a college education. Is it the same, that equation, as it used to be? Is a college education necessary to achieve your professional and personal goals in life? And if it is, how do you afford it? How do you amass all of the money that you'll need these days to send your kids, especially to a four-year university, but in some cases even a two-year university? Our guest is Ron Lieber, a New York Times columnist who writes the Your Money column. His most recent book is The Price You Pay for College. We want to hear from you as well during this conversation. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Call and tell us where you are in this journey. Are you trying to get somebody ready to go to college, trying to get the money ready to send someone to college? Are you someone who is going to college and trying to figure out how to pay for it? Or are you someone who's trying to figure out whether some of these alternative choices, two-year degrees or training programs, is a better way to go for you? Again, as always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Ron, before the break, we heard from Ian, whose story, I think, really highlights the sacrifices that people often are making to try to get themselves through school, and I guess the dangers of stretching yourself in such a way to make those sacrifices, that there are incredible trade-offs that sometimes come to visit on people because of the choices that they make. It really does cut to that issue of the value of college education and whether it is worth it for everyone.
Yeah, Ian, thank you so much for calling in. It is easy sometimes, to let these conversations address the needs of people who are in the upper middle class and are trying to, figure out if Michigan State delivers more value than Denison University in Ohio. Mm-hmm. Or should you pay a little more to go out of state, if you got into, Indiana University, Bloomington? But the fact of the matter is that there are many more people like Ian than the people who are choosing between a whole bunch of good options and have six-figure income. So, Ian, let me start by saying this is all really complicated, and it's not your fault. And I think you know that, right? I'm not sure whether you have a parent or parents, who were or are supporting you. It sounds like you don't. And for anyone in that situation, ask for as much help as you need, because you deserve it. And the fact of the matter is that at every institution, at every community college, at every four-year school, there is someone somewhere who is just aching to help you, right? Maybe it's someone in the financial aid office. Maybe it's someone in the counseling center. You may have to sort of fight to get attention. But when you tell them what you're up against, right, that you're working three jobs, that you're, not sure that you're pursuing, the right education or the right, field of study, that you're not sure if you've taken on too much debt or the right kind of debt, or that you understand the repayment possibilities, right? Somebody will help you, and it's okay to ask for it. You should demand it, because you deserve it.
Yeah. Ian, I really do want to wish you well on that really extraordinary journey that you're on. Let's go next to Rebecca in Grosse Pointe Woods. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. Yeah, so I guess I'm offering a different perspective, in that I come from Australia. And I've been living in Detroit now with my husband for the last 9 years. We've been married for almost 20. And we have three kids here who were very young when we moved here. They're now 10, 13, and 16. And doing college in America has never been an option for us because we know how much more affordable it is in Australia. So if the kids want to go to college, they will be going to college in Australia. And I thank God we have that option because it is affordable. The statistics I found out recently, we did a webinar with a college in Sydney and found out that 50% of the Australian population is college educated because it's affordable.
Because it's affordable, and right? Wow.
Because it's affordable. And you can get student loans. Often people need student loans to put themselves through college, but those student loans are interest-free. And they're paid back once the student graduates and starts working. The student loans are paid back, taken out of their tax. So if they don't start working straight away or if they travel, there's no pressure. They can pay back those interest-free loans whenever they're back in Australia and earning an income.
Wow. Wow. Rebecca, that's a really remarkable comparison. And I mean, kudos to you and your husband for being able to take advantage of that if your kids do decide to go to college. Ron Lieber, this comparison between what we do in this country and what they do, not just in Australia, but throughout the rest of the Western world with college and college affordability is an important dimension of the discussion. We are an outlier in many ways.
Exactly, right? And let's talk about some of those many ways. And, you know, thank you to the caller for pointing this out. So many parents who were born someplace other than the United States and who are raising their kids in the United States think what we do is absolutely bananas, right? You know, the reason why it's cheaper in Australia is because of the decisions that politicians and the people who vote for them have made about priorities, right? So if we want different priorities, we can make different choices at the ballot box. There are states where community college is free. There are states like New York where if you earn under a, you know, certain reasonable amount of money in terms of household income, your kid can have tuition-free, you know, education at, you know, the flagship state universities, right? This is something that's possible. The other thing that she mentioned that is really important, and so many people who understand and have studied student debt and student borrowing wish we had, was that system in Australia where your loan repayment is simply and easily recaptured through the tax system. There's no calling loan servicers and them trying to chase you down at your address and 8 different loans and 6 different checks at 4 different addresses. None of that goes on in Australia. It is so utterly sensible, and the fact that we cannot get that here is extremely frustrating.
Well, one of the things that we often say or end up arguing about here is, well, that would cost us an awful lot in taxes that we don't pay now to be able to provide those things. But I always kind of say, well, but we're all shouldering that cost as individuals anyway. I mean, the people who decide to send their kids to college. So, I mean, would it cost more, I guess, if we had taxes that actually supported higher ed than if we continue to do it the way that we are, which is just kind of every person for themselves trying to come up with the money to subsidize what we don't pay in taxes?
Well, I mean, it's an incredibly complex question, which is why we have a hard time, you know, sort of settling on an answer. I mean, what would the return be on additional state subsidies, right? How much more would the state have in tax revenue going forward 5, 10, or 50 years if, you know, the population had, you know, 5 percentage points more people who actually went to college and graduated and earned accordingly and paid taxes accordingly, right? This is an investment, right? It feels like a cost in the moment, but it's an investment in productivity and higher income, you know, which leads to more revenue down the road. And so, you know, how do you do that math? Or, you know, maybe it's a question of thinking in the moment, right, about, you know, what is necessary and sufficient when offering an undergraduate education and what is excessive. And you know, you as a state or as a private institution, right, could try to provide a super stripped down degree without the, you know, accoutrements and the nice dorms and without the counseling center and the career office. Mm-hmm. But the marketplace so far has proven that there's not a ton of demand for that. There are, you know, online degrees, but, you know, it's not always clear, you know, how those kind of perform in the marketplace, right? Which is, you know, you're often trying to get a degree to impress a hiring manager, yeah. Right? So we as parents have chosen to make different choices because, you know, at least middle class kids and above have come to think of residential undergraduate education, the four-year version of that, as a sort of expectation bordering on an entitlement.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Rebecca, really appreciate the call and that that contrast that you're able to draw between what we do here and what you're able to do in Australia. Let's next go to Jeff in Southfield. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Hey.
How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. So I have just a bit of a different perspective, contrarian perhaps. I've had the plum-pleasing pleasure of being financially trained with some of the smartest people on the planet. And I personally interviewed nearly 3,000 people regarding this topic. And what I have come to the conclusion of is that the cost of college is not the problem. Parents will have their credit card debt over their lifetime will be far more detrimental to them than their cost of college. The way we pay our mortgages will have far more detriment to us than the cost of college ever will be. The reality is that regardless what a student does, less than 1% of entering freshmen will receive a full ride. But unfortunately, this fact, I do not understand why our traditional voices, our hardworking high school counselors, representatives from the colleges do not talk about this fact. And so they're sent on this wild goose chase of looking for money, which does not work for the masses. We're not talking about financial literacy from the point where people can fund college and become successful at it. Let me give my personal story. My son, my oldest son, has given me three grandsons in a very short period of time. I'm in the process now of positioning them so that when they get to kindergarten, first grade, I will be able to fund their private education with the same money that's my retirement account, which is the same money which is my business funding account. I am going to solve multiple problems with the same dollar because I understand the banker's code. The point that I am making here is that as I hear parents' frustration, as I hear parents' regret, what they say to me all the time is, Jeff, where were you 10 years ago? Because they're not being taught how to beat the high cost of college, regardless of the cost of the college, without putting themselves in a financial bind. And yeah. I think that's the conversation we need to be having.
Jeff, I'm really glad you called and shared that perspective. I mean, that's a really interesting take on what the problem is and how we solve it. Ron Lieber, I want to hear your response to what Jeff's saying.
Sure. I would love to know what this banker's code is. Ron at ronlieber.com is where you find me on email. Send it along. Look, I could not agree more on financial literacy. My last book, The Opposite of Spoiled, was all about how and when and why to talk to kids ages 4 to 16 about money and what to say when you do. If we don't start those conversations early, the 17 and 18-year-olds are not really going to be ready to reckon with the cost of college. There are many, you know, cities and towns and states that do financial literacy in middle school and high school, but basically none of those curriculums are built around college. You could do a whole semester on the system explaining all of the things that he mentioned that would help people have a little bit more of a chip on their shoulder and also know exactly where to find the data that tells them what somebody in their income bracket is likely to pay on average. Mm-hmm. And while it's true that there are very few full rides out there, it is also true that the vast majority of people do not pay full price nationwide, right? They get financial aid of various sorts. And so it's important to know ahead of time what you might be asked to pay, and then you can make decisions about where to apply or enroll accordingly. But then again, right, there's only so much financial literacy can do. If you're not lucky enough to have enough money to be able to save, if you are not lucky enough to have an incredibly generous grandparent who's looking out for you both on the education front and on the money front, and, you know, those folks need help too.
Yep, I think we have maybe lost our connection with Ron Lieber. Let's take a couple minutes to try to get him back so he can finish up his point about this incredible cost of college that people face. Meanwhile, let's take one more call. Let's go to Eric outside of Windsor. Eric, what's on your mind? Go ahead, Eric.
Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, my comment was that university is definitely cheaper here in Canada. I put two daughters through university, and to be honest with you, they were able to afford it mostly just by working their own in summer and a little bit while they went to school. Mm-hmm. They never had a student loan. They lived at home, so that made it cheaper. But I don't necessarily think that that's always a great thing. I think it's incentivized a lot of kids to go to university who really shouldn't have gone.
Yeah.
And even though they might not be hugely in debt, they're not really any further ahead in their careers. Or
right, it didn't do what they thought it might do. Yeah, Eric, Eric, I really appreciate the call and the comments. We do have Ron Lieber back. Ron, I want to give you a chance to finish the point you were making.
Oh, sure. So, you know, to the caller, I'm glad he made the point about increased subsidy causing mm-hmm. increased enrollment and, you know, the possible degradation of the experience or, you know, people who ending up there who may not belong. You know, one way that countries handle that is by sort of, you know, raising the bar for admission. But then often you end up in sort of a tiered track system the way they do, you know, over in England, right? So it's difficult, but, you know, I think you can make a reasonable case here in the United States that, you know, we would be better off productivity-wise and, you know, potentially GDP-wise if we had, you know, more college graduates or at least more people who had gone through certificate programs. So, you know, I'm not sure where we lost one another before, but, you know, the point I was just trying to make in brief is that financial literacy is essential. It's important. Both schools and parents should, you know, build the money conversations around, you know, college and the system and how to beat that system.
Mm-hmm.
The rules only go so far if you just don't have the money to save, or you save some, but you don't have a super generous, you know, grandparent in the picture, in the background, trying to help out. And so, you know, we need to think about those folks too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Ron Lieber, it was really great to have you here to talk about college and the cost of college and how we pay for it. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how one of the largest companies in the world is deciding to not require a four-year degree for many of the jobs that it provides. Kaylee Hall, an auto reporter for the Detroit News, will tell us what GM is up to next. Stay tuned for more Detroit Today.